You're pretty sure it's the alarm clock to blame, as there you are jumping out of bed half an hour later than you'd planned and having to make a quick line for the front door before sprinting to the train station. The right train eventually pulls up at the platform and you just manage to squeeze on board, hoping in vain that you'll make up for lost time by the time you reach your destination. But of course, as the train rolls into your station, you're now nearly an hour behind schedule. You try to tiptoe past the boss's office, yet that's the moment she happens to be leaving the room. She's not too concerned that you're running late. After all, who isn't? But quickly, you find yourself shouldered with half a dozen extra tasks that are completely unrelated to anything you've been employed to do. Tasks that don't fit with the pressing priorities you've already set for the day. When you eventually get to sit down at your desk, you quickly discover that the project your colleague assured you would be completed, the breakage the techie assured you would be fixed, on which so much of the rest of the day's work is dependent, is nowhere near ready. Suddenly, you realize that your lunch break is forfeit, and it dawns on you that you won't be on the train you hope to catch at the end of the day. And to top it all, the coffee machine is broke. If your day is unfolding anything like that, well, let me say thank you for carving out this time. Work pressures are all too real, and we never take it for granted that you're able to be here. The truth is, whatever our situation, there will be times when we feel like cursing our work. But in those moments, it's worth stopping and reminding ourselves that the reason our experience is as it is, it's because all of us are already working under a curse. Not that we are cursed, not that our work is cursed, never that. But the ground on which we stand as we go about work, the conditions in which we labor, that is now under a curse. Glance there at verse 17. Cursed is the ground because of you. Through painful toil, you will eat of it all the days of your life. Our work, whatever it is, was always intended to be an activity we would delight in, an enrichment to our lives. And I trust that many of us can speak with a joyful passion about the work we're putting our hands to in this season. Yet the reality is, so often, so much of our work is experienced as toil, even painful toil. A helpful picture is given for us there in verse 18. The ground you are working, and all of us are working very different pieces of ground across this city. That ground, it will produce thorns and thistles for you. The picture is this. There you are, plugging away at something, carefully nurturing that thing, whether it be a person, a project, or a plan, wanting it to grow strong, wanting to produce something beautiful. You alone know how much you've invested in it. Those long days, the sleepless nights. And all the time, there seems to be another principle at play, accompanying you each step of the way. What you labor to build up, it serves to pull down. Where you mean to let breathe, it steps in to stifle and choke. If anyone here is an avid gardener, you'll know exactly how this principle works. The day you dig out that new flower bed and trim and order everything just as you want it, you may step back and admire your handiwork, but you're very aware that the real work has only just begun. If you now sat back and let nature run its course, within a week, a fortnight, a month, a year, well, you'd have nothing left. Almost immediately, the thorns and thistles have crept back in, encroaching on your masterpiece. It's going to be a fight to keep them at bay. Well, I'm pleased to say I've been spared this particular yoke here in central London. But the principle is universal and applies to the whole of life, including all our work. All of us can recount those occasions when the work we were about that held so much promise with some person or on some project or progressing some plan, suddenly it stalls or it falls far short of what you'd hoped to achieve. You may even have seen some life ambition turned to dust. For isn't that where everything is now headed? Dust to dust, verse 19. The Apostle Paul, writing in the New Testament letter to the Romans, speaks of this principle, this curse, as one of frustration. The creation was subjected to frustration, Romans chapter 8, verse 20. Well, certainly all of us know what it is to be frustrated. It arises on those occasions when we feel held back and constrained, unable to go somewhere or to do something. So a sense of frustration in the whole of our lives, but perhaps most especially in our work, is all too common. The whole creation experiences this frustration across every inch of ground. It is constrained from becoming all that it might become. It is held back from attaining the heights it might otherwise attain. Now, recognizing that this principle is in play will be of help to us in at least two ways. The first is in the area of idolatry. Idolatry. There is always a danger of our work becoming an idol, a substitute god. We believe that if we give it all that we have, it will give us all that we want, our wealth and happiness and status. But when we recognize this principle of frustration in play, we realize that our work is never going to deliver all that we hoped. It falls far short. It is a god that fails. And as with all false gods, the more we invest in it, the less we get back in return. We might want to revise downwards our expectations of work so that we approach it in a way that is real. The second way this knowledge helps us is in the area of idleness. Idleness. The toil that is involved, the sheer exertion that is required of us, seemingly to make only the smallest difference. Well, it can lead us to drop our tools and cry, what's the point? And that's before the setbacks that come our way. There is always the danger of us becoming idle in our work, watching the clock, counting down the days until our next holiday. But when we recognize that this general principle of frustration is in play, it sheds light on our specific frustrations, both big and small. We might again want to revise our expectations of work, even revising them upwards, all the while wanting to remain real. Let's take an example. And for this, it's always good to take a common, even mundane one. This morning, in my email inbox were sitting 1,992 unread emails. It'll be higher by now. To be clear, this is all after the junk mail has been separated. 1,992. Now, I'm told that if you manage to completely clear your email inbox, then a little smiley emoji face appears to congratulate you and say, well done. That may be a myth for all I know. And let's face it, I'm never likely to know. Is this a frustration? Yes. But here's the thing. How am I going to respond to that frustration? I could approach it in an idolatrous way. All these emails have to be given the most thorough attention. All of these good requests being made of me have to be acted upon fully. Well, straight away, I'm setting myself up for disappointment. The emails are going to keep on coming in more quickly than I can act upon them. I could approach this instead in an attitude of idleness. This is a mountain that's never going to be moved. Why bother attending to any of these messages? I could approach it that way. Although, it would be much better, if I had already factored disappointment into my working life. I can't be all things to all people. Neither can you. So, instead of becoming idle in the face of the many pulls upon us, we can focus. What are the best things that I can attend to, that I can attempt to do well? Frustration will always accompany our work. In the midst of it, we must steer a path that avoids both idolatry and idleness. How? We'll be hearing more on this next Thursday. Well, we can't possibly finish here without pointing the way ahead. There is something vital that must be said about where we now stand. When Jesus Christ was arrested and presented before the Roman soldiers to be mocked and beaten, they took thorns and fashioned them into a crown. These thorns were placed upon his head. This was the crown that Jesus wore as they nailed him to the cross. Those thorns which speak so powerfully of the frustration of the curse. Jesus was now taking that curse upon his own head. And what frustration Jesus experienced there. Cursed are those who are hung on a tree. But as Jesus cried out and breathed his last, the stranglehold that the curse has held over this creation was broken. Its effects are as yet still only too real. But it no longer has the final word on our lives and on our work in the way it did before. As Jesus was raised to new life, no longer is it certain that to dust all things will return. God did not let his Holy One see decay. What does this mean? To put it simply, wherever Jesus now plants his feet, that is no longer cursed ground. That's holy ground. All of us here today have been given different patches of ground to tend to right across this city and beyond. What's your patch? Working with and for Jesus. No matter how hard or thorny that ground may appear, it too can become holy in the measure Jesus grants it. Let's expect, in all hope, that it will. Amen.